Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community. And welcome to Nature Mystic with Selena Fox, a podcast where we enjoy encore presentations of topics covered by Circle Sanctuary Senior Minister Selena Fox from her previous podcasts, Circlecraft Studies and Nature Folk. In tonight's encore from March 2016, Selena was joined by Phyllis Carratt and to discuss the contributions of goddess spirituality and contemporary paganism to the quest for equal rights for women around the world.
Welcome to Nature Folk, and this is Selena Fox, and tonight we have a special program. We are going to celebrate International Women's Day, and helping me to do this is a well-known pagan author, shamanic Wiccan priestess. She's an attorney, she's an interfaith leader and activist, Phyllis Carratt, and she has written a number of books, and one of the most recent accomplishments was helping to bring forth the inaugural Women's Assembly at the Parliament of the World's Religions, which was held in Salt Lake City, Utah, this past October in 2015. So, Phyllis, welcome to Nature Folk.
Hi, Selena. It's a joy to be with you again, and looking forward to having our conversation this evening.
Well, and happy International Women's Day.
Same to you.
No, we have so many things.
High in the air.
Well, we have so many things in common, and in addition to our interest in the craft and shamanism and doing interfaith work, we both have been involved in that quest for equal rights for women. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about your own background and how you've come to be involved in that kind of work.
Well, I had a mother who was, you know, it always comes back to your, to the great mother one way or another. And my mother was what she described as an Eleanor Roosevelt feminist, was a young woman in the 1930s and very active in the early civil rights movement before it was a civil rights movement, and in the labor movement as it was coming about in the 1930s. And I was raised with a very strong set of humanitarian values. Neither one of my parents were religious, but they believed in the goodness of the human heart. And my plan was to go and be a social justice lawyer, which is, in fact, how I started off fighting organized crime and trade unions. But during that same early period of picking a path, I got tapped on the shoulder by the great mother, by the goddess. And that was actually the story of the first book that I wrote, which I cannot believe I'm approaching the 20th anniversary of it. It was my memoir, Book of Shadows. And I really had not had any kind of spiritual training or upbringing. I was a little too young for the psychedelic 60s. I missed out on, you know, the Carlos Castaneda thing. But when the goddess arrived, she arrived with full magic. And I do think that the call comes to everybody, but not everybody recognizes it. Not everybody answers. And I did. And the experiences that I had were so powerful and so real and so had an objective component, which my rational side really required, that I followed the breadcrumbs that she laid down for me, and it led me to the mother grove of the Minoan Sisterhood, which was just really beginning in New York. And I was initiated and studied with them as I was also becoming a young lawyer in New York for almost 4 years, and then began my own coven, and finally it became my own tradition because I was also working shamanically at the same time in the very first drumming circle to be created out of the work of Dr. Michael Harner on core shamanism. So those two things were interwoven from the outset of my spiritual journey. And I was and am and don't think you can practice an earth-based spirituality, whatever form it is, whatever particular kind of paganism, which is the popular term. I kind of prefer Euro-indigenous revivals myself. But without being, to some extent, a feminist. What does it mean to be a feminist? It means that you believe, you know, in the equal rights of women. You know? I mean, it's kind of a ludicrous thing that this is even an issue at this late stage of the game, but it is. The fact is that, you know, women are increasingly in leadership roles, but the world is radically, as we well know, right, as practitioners of an earth religion, you need both. There's an essential complementarity and a necessity, and the world is radically out of balance and in terrible environmental trouble because of the suppression of the feminine. And so to some extent, I think I do continue to put a certain emphasis on the divine feminine, on the goddess and goddesses, and the role of women as priestesses and as spiritual leaders, because, as the Taoists say, if a tree, you know, grows all of its life bent in one direction and you wish it to grow straight for a time, you must bend it in the other direction. So to reestablish a healthy balance, we have to cultivate and nurture this missing divine feminine, this absent divine feminine in ourselves and in our religion and in our spiritual practices and then in the world around us. So my first was an all-women's circle. The circle that I led for the first eight years of my work as a high priestess was a women's circle. And then gradually I came to work with both men and women and to understand the necessity of both. But as I said, this essential importance of reestablishing the fullness of the feminine, which has been missing. So it requires a particular devotion and mindfulness and attention. And when you offer that, right, when you pay attention to the grail, I think your magic becomes particularly potent. I know I was trained, even within a women's group, in what I call wand magic, which was, you know, the raising of energy and the projection of that energy into a thought form, you know, in order to manifest change, which is from the old, you know, ceremonial magical schools and very masculine. And as I worked, particularly because I was learning shamanically, I felt it was essential to work grail magic, which is to be open and receptive and to be a vessel, you know, into which the divine pours itself. And that one is transformed through that communion. And that's a more sort of feminine model. And you need both. You know, you need both. If you're really going to work magic, your magic has to be guided by the divine. And that means you have to be open and receptive to the divine. You have to receive it in order to be guided by it, in order to work with it. And it transforms the way in which you work magic. It transforms it into a very deeply mystical and profoundly spiritual practice, which I think is what it's meant to be. Long
yeah,
answer.
I agree. Yeah, and I think something we both have in common is the
yes.
fact that we both had strong mothers, some differences in terms of upbringing and orientation. I came from a more conservative political background, but still had a very strong guiding force. My mother's mother actually had education and went out into the workforce in the first part of the 20th century, before many women were actually doing that. So coming through my mother and my mother's mother has been some making your way in the world. And I know something that both you and I have done is gone into some parts of society and broken some gender barriers. I went into the realm of industrial and commercial photography in the 1970s, back when it was largely a male profession. Mm-hmm. And while certainly there are both men and women attorneys, you know, now it's common to see both men and women. You going into the attorney work that you've done was also blazing some trails.
Oh, yes. There were, when I started, let's see, it was 1979, and 5% of lawyers were women. And Anita Hill was speaking today, and I, you know, completely, when I heard her speak and make her charges against Supreme Court Justice, now Justice Thomas, I recognized immediately and knew she was being honest and straightforward because I recognized my own experience and that it was very, very tough. And my, in fact, for me, my Wiccan practice, being a priestess, was a source of incredible nourishment and empowerment for me as a young woman attorney. It challenged some of the values, you know, that were, because it was a male-dominated world. And it made me rethink my desire to have access to the game and helped me to understand the importance of activism that would change the rules of the game. Much harder, right? Much harder. And in order to change the rules of the game, to be more balanced, to be more inclusive of feminine values, et cetera, you have to have, you have to gain access to the halls of fame. You have to play by the rules of the game. And, I mean, to some extent, that motivated my work for the last, my gosh, almost 25, 30 years in the interfaith community, where you remember, I mean, we were not welcome at the first Parliament of the World's Religions. It was a huge, I spent half my time at that parliament fighting for us to be able to have a ritual that had been approved by the parliament, but which the city of Chicago was then trying to basically block for us to perform a full moon ritual. And to this day, there are still rumors that circulate in the interfaith community that we sacrificed an animal. Despite the fact that there were 750 people and movie cameras and everything. I think it was because one of the people in the ritual was wearing a wolf skin on his head. but you know, to this day, 30 years after finally gaining access to that game, and of course Deborah Ann Light played such an important role. We were all there. You were there. The Temple of Ara was there, my tradition. The Covenant of the Goddess was there. I was the chair of the Covenant at the time. Earth Spirit was there. The Fellowship of Isis was there.
And Circle Sanctuary, we had people from a number of our different paths that make up Circle Sanctuary. And, I mean, it was really an amazing Centennial Parliament.
It was, and we were there, and we were, you know, we had speaking slots, and we participated in the processional. I served. Angie Buchanan was on the board. Then Andres Arthin was on the board. Then I came onto the board. At one point, there were three pagans on the board, and I became the first vice chair. Pagan vice chair of the board. I served two terms and really fought the battle to save the parliament from bankruptcy. I mean, it felt like the goddess had put me there And it was a tremendous personal sacrifice. It took several years, and I was overseeing a half a dozen pro bono law firms to try to save the organization, and we were successful. And then we had to put on a parliament, and we did it on a shoestring. But kind of my reward was that when I said, listen, you have to have a women's task force. It's crazy that this is an interfaith organization, the oldest, the first, the biggest, the, you know, the most important, that doesn't have a women's task force. We put together a task force. And then when we said, okay, we're going to do a parliament, you know, we're going to self-fund, first time really since the first one. And I said, I want to do an assembly for women. And they said, okay, but you have to pay for it yourself. So I had to go out and raise all the money for the women's assembly, but we had 3,500 women and men. We had speakers from all over the world. We had, you were there. We had phenomenal speakers.
It was wonderful. It was really an amazing assembly.
Hey, Selena, this is Dave Ewing here. So it looks like you both got dropped off off the call. So you're back, and we're waiting for Phyllis to call back in. So thank you. It's
okay,
a story,
was
though.
That a blog talk thing? I thought it was my phone.
It might have been a weird coincidence that your phones both dropped.
Okay.
Because weird. Yeah. So we're still live. But that's been a good story there with the her telling of the assembly and the challenges of getting in and setting that up.
Okay, so we are live, and I can talk a little bit as you reach out and see if we can get the technical difficulties sorted out.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So the 2015 Parliament of the World's Religions brought together nearly 10,000 people from around the world to Salt Lake City, Utah. There was the first parliament in 1893, and that was held in Chicago. And many people consider the Parliament of the World's Religions the very first international interfaith event that ushered in what's now considered the interfaith movement. And 100 years after the first Parliament of the World's Religion was the 1993 Parliament of the World's Religions held in Chicago, in the same city. And Phyllis and I were among many pagans that took part. There were five different pagan organizations that were among the 200 religious groups sponsoring the Parliament of the World's Religions that year. There was a grand processional that began the 1993 Parliament, and each of the groups had five people representing the groups marching in procession. Many people were in their ceremonial robes, and there were people from the different religions of the world. What I thought was really fabulous with the pagans that took part were you could see the colorfulness of the different traditions that were present there. And one of the things that was wonderful was that there was great diversity, but also wonderful commonality as well. We all joined together and celebrated our connections with nature, and we also celebrated ourselves as being part of the larger circle of life on planet Earth. One of the things that happened in the very first Parliament of the World's Religions was there was on the main stage people from different religious traditions doing prayers and invocations. And one of the things that I have as one of my favorite memories was when Lady Olivia Robertson, co-founder of the Fellowship of Isis in Ireland, did an invocation. Up to this point, it was pretty much the different religious leaders calling on God, he. Well, she called on goddess, she, as well as nature spirits. And one of the wonderful things that happened was a great blessing flowed over the whole assembly. So the good thing was that we had goddess spirituality present and the divine not only in male forms but in female forms included at that first plenary session of the Centennial Parliament of World's Religions. Not everyone was embracing of diversity, even though the Parliament was about converging diversity and having understanding and collaboration across the different religious traditions. And what ended up happening was that some people actually left the parliament. One branch of the Greek Orthodox left in a very public way because of pagans and their polytheism and their honoring of the divine feminine. And so that was how the parliament in 1993 got off to a start. And I think Phyllis is back to join us as
hey,
we reminisce some more.
Hi.
Hi. Well, technical difficulties will not keep us from telling the tale of going where priestesses had not gone before in
right.
the Parliament of the World's Religions. So I talked a little bit about Olivia Robertson invoking the goddess, then the other big piece about that first parliament, in addition to all of us doing presentations and networking, and Circle Sanctuary had a booth and a lot of people were networking with us there, was this amazing ritual that was held outdoors during the parliament in the park with more than 750 people and the media showing up. So I want to give thanks to you for all of that work that you did to help clear the way for us to do that ceremony. It was a wonderful ceremony. I was glad to be part of it. And it really was a demonstration of bringing together Wiccan and other pagan practitioners and organizations to connect with nature and to celebrate life.
Yeah, I have always believed in the importance of, you know, I was, thanks in part to Margot Adler, who asked me years ago, many, many years ago, I think 1983, to do an interview. I think it was with the CBC, the Canadian Broadcast Company. It was a little documentary piece. And you know, I have felt from the beginning that it was essential, that you cannot practice this faith however you practice it. You know, everybody has their own unique take on this, but there are certain things that bind us, you know, that we live in a sacred world and we're seeking to live in a sacred manner, and that, you know, that the natural world embodies that divinity for us. That you can't practice this religion in fear, and that the world needs us to practice it visibly and publicly, so that them that we carry can be shared, not in a proselytizing way, but in a way that, you know, is present for those who can understand it. And so the ritual that we did, you know, our presence at that first parliament, and then the consistent presence that, you know, we all maintained through each of these parliaments, expensive, you know, our communities, or in my case, you know, myself, you know, we had to pay for the travel and the hotel. It's very expensive to participate in these parliaments overseas.
True.
And it's a big financial commitment that each of us made to sustain the presence of pagans at these events, and to make sure that we were visible, because of the belief that if the world could see who we are and how we practice and what we believe, that would dispel the negative stereotypes and would transform the way in which we could practice our faiths in the world with safety, you know, and with respect, and especially as we got older for our children, that it was essential. And that one of the best ways to do that was in an interfaith context, because you were doing it with religious leaders who could then go back into their communities and be allies, right, all over the country, all over the world. And it was a strategy that I think has worked. We have a long, long, long way to go. We are still second-class citizens, even if I did get to be the vice chair of the parliament, even if we did get to have an assembly, even if we do participate, you know, in many more forums and panels, et cetera, we have a long way to go. But we've accomplished a tremendous amount because we all understood from the beginning the importance of our presence at this kind of an international forum of esteem. And because of our consistency, you know, coming back, it has been what now? Gosh, 1993 was the first time.
Right.
It's been a long time. And we've made tremendous – I mean, it's an extraordinary thing to think back to 1993 and now, you know, to have had these positions of major leadership at that organization.
It's just been really fabulous. And as I look back at the parliaments that have happened since the 1993 one, there we had the ritual that we've talked about. We had – Olivia Robertson at the very opening,
yes,
calling on the goddess, and Deborah Ann Light became a member of the Assembly of Religious and Spiritual Leaders that met that year in connection with the parliament, and she represented Covenant of the Goddess and her spirit community and Circle Sanctuary, since she was
right,
part of all three of our organizations. In 1999, we were in Cape Town, South Africa. In 2004, we were in Barcelona in Spain, and then moved on to Melbourne, Australia in 2009, and now 2015 in Salt Lake City, Utah. In each one of those parliaments, pagans have been more accepted and understood. Mm-hmm. Indigenous as a whole have continued to play parts and become more understood as well. And I think one of the most powerful things about the 2015 Parliament was the inaugural Women's Assembly. And one of the things that will forever go into my mind was the very opening session with the women with many types of drums that were drumming people into this grand assembly hall that could hold 10,000 people, and just people coming in, men and women, people from many faith traditions, the wonderful array of speakers from different world religions up on the stage, seeing these women of different ages, of different ethnicities, of different cultures, of different religions from around the world. It was a wonderful, wonderful event within the larger parliament. Share some of your impressions. I know you were close to it because you helped make this happen. When the day finally came to launch the inaugural Women's Assembly, what are some of your memories of it actually starting to manifest?
Well, it was, I mean, it started as a, you know, it was a vision that I'd held for many years, and it was sort of my the thankless task of organizing the whole thing. It took over a year of really full-time work, and that's working with a couple of terrific assistants. But it was, you don't know what you're, you know, the way that it was a twofold process. So, you know, there's the vision of, you know, it is essential to have an assembly for women. It had never happened before on a scale like this. There'd never been this kind of an interfaith gathering of women. It was important for it to take place within the context of the parliament because it's the first and the largest and the oldest, et cetera. I felt really important for me to do it because of the importance of the divine feminine, particularly at this particular moment. While I have great respect for women of other faith traditions, you know, the divine feminine has not played a role in the biblical faiths really until recently. I mean, there is the Shekinah and et cetera, but you know, it is not, she has been hidden. And she's not hidden in our faith traditions, and she's not hidden in Hindu and certain elements of Buddhism, etc. So the opportunity to bring forth the divine feminine to me was historically profound and a great responsibility. So there was a need to have a real sensitivity to the diversity of women and faith traditions and to provide as much opportunity. I mean, I just kept saying yes. I had a couple of terrific women, a Muslim lawyer and a Christian minister, who were on my task force as well. I kept saying, you know, we have to say yes to as much as possible. You know, just keep saying yes. That was my attitude in reviewing the programming. But you don't know what you're going to get. So when you're shaping the programming, you have some ideas. Like, I knew that it was very important for us to have panels on women's religious education, on women's spiritual leadership, on breaking the stained glass ceiling, on the divine feminine, on women as spiritual leaders. We had that wonderful panel it was really historic, you know, with Vivian Crowley, with you, with Starhawk, with Deirdre Arthin, that I participated in. You know, it was really remarkable. And we had a woman rabbi who actually was phenomenal as well, to give us a little more diversity. But that was that was an historic moment to have all those women priestesses. I was pining for Margot.
She was there in spirit.
She was. So, you know, I made sure that we had, you know, these particular programs, you know, and I made sure that people were invited and et cetera. I wanted tremendous diversity and high-level people, you know, in our opening sessions and at the women's plenary that opened the parliament the next day. And we had great diversity and terrific. We had just remarkable. We had incredible speakers. We had the president of Union Theological Seminary and Mary Ann Williamson and Bishop Barbara I need the list in front of me now, but it was really Diana Butler Bass spoke at the assembly. I mean, a long list. We had
And having the indigenous grandmothers there
was
also a powerful addition.
Very important.
And really having across the generations around the world, across different religious traditions, walks of life, to converge that diversity was just fabulous.
I think we were reaching for, I don't know if we could go back and do it again, or we do it the next time. And one of the things that I had wanted to see follow up on this year, and I don't see that it's really happening with the Parliament as the vehicle for it right now, which is unfortunate. We began to glean what it was that we held in common as women, regardless of our faith traditions, right? And it was actually that question that I drew upon in order to draft the Declaration for the Dignity and Human Rights of Women, and that women should be treated with respect and with dignity, that they have a right to be treated equally within their faith traditions, to have access to decision-making institutions, to participate in those institutions equally when those institutions assert control or power or influence over their lives, and that they should have an equal right to leadership roles. That's a radical statement. I wasn't sure the Parliament would pass it, but they did, and we issued it. And it was an affirming statement on the essential role of women. You cannot solve the problems of the world without their active participation in every religious community throughout the world. That was historic, and it was received with enormous enthusiasm. So, that seeking of common ground and that finding of common ground in both the suffering that women have withstood over thousands of years in almost everything, including Buddhism, Hinduism, in every religious tradition, women have been demoted to a secondary status. And there is a growing realization, an awakening, that the world will not survive without the full participation of women in finding the solutions to the crises that we're facing, and the full participation of women in their religious institutions, and in the full participation of the feminine in our experience of the divine. And I think that began to emerge out of this Parliament in the diversity and in the unity that we were finding. It was really incredibly moving. And it came down, so it was this is a very profound and broad and sweeping and important historic document and event. It was also deeply personal, right? And very intimate.
True.
And I think the red tent for me epitomized that, I kept going in there and there would be a woman in one corner, a Muslim woman, kneeling with her head on the floor in prayer, and in the opposite was a woman in Buddhist meditation with her prayer beads, and there was a woman lying in the middle receiving a Reiki treatment. It was all going on simultaneously. There were the indigenous grandmothers. There were Dalit feminists that were giving classes on green spirituality and the divine feminine. You name it. It was just that contact. It was a moment that really moved me very deeply, where there were tables outside the women's sacred space, where little coffee and stuff. And at one of these tables were a group of Catholic nuns in their white habits, and at another table were Buddhist nuns in their brown robes, and they were talking to each other. And at some point, they started talking to each other, and they got up, and a friend of mine took a picture of all of them. So, they recognized each other. you know, that they were sisters. They saw.
It was fabulous.
Yeah.
And I saw the synchronistic effects of having such a grand gathering with people very dedicated to the spiritual life, whether they're religious leaders or not as their career. Mm-hmm. There was certainly the people that came a depth in religion and or spirituality as part of a life path. And that seemed to bring people together, even though it was an enormous place, the Salt Palace, and, you know, huge city blocks.
Yeah.
It took a while to walk from one place to the other in the building. And one of the things that I found amazing was how certain people would just find each other.
Yeah.
I did a session on green burial, green cemeteries, and it was a shared session with Jewish women also sharing from their tradition. And from the very beginning, we connected with each other, found we had friends in common, and throughout the whole parliament, without us even trying to arrange it, we kept connecting, including at the inaugural Women's Assembly, even though it was packed with thousands of people. So there was this wonderful convergence of people. And I think at this parliament, more than any of the other ones that had preceded it, the goddess, the divine feminine, was more present, not only in the programming, but energetically and visually. I really appreciated the what I called the hall of goddesses.
Yes.
Different art pieces of the divine feminine across cultures, across national boundaries, religious traditions. Really, really fabulous. And Maka helped pull together the mask of the goddess.
Gorgeous.
And there is this wonderful interfaith multicultural enactment of a selection of goddesses from different world religions.
Yeah.
But I think by far one of my most favorite connections with the divine feminine and priestess life was the panel that you moderated, what I've been calling the Priestesses and Seers panel. It had a longer name, but having all of us there share what it's like to be a priestess in 21st century world, and to share common views and our work with the divine, it was a great gathering of different traditions and different perspectives.
Yeah, and it was well attended, and I think deeply appreciated. There was, I appreciate hearing that, and I received so many notes afterwards from women who participated, and because there were so many panels. I mean, we had panels on with the Indigenous grandmothers and the women and the environment and Shakti. There was a brilliant panel. Marianne participated in that too, from the point of view of Hinduism and the divine feminine and the earth. You have to go online, find the parliament site, look at the programming. It's still up there. It was so diverse, tremendous amount of terrific Muslim women's programming, number of very powerful programs on women and violence and religion. I think that each interest, each topic of interest, each
faith tradition, I think, will speak with incredible enthusiasm for the experience that they had. But I do feel, and I think so many women did, that the women's component was incredibly vital and alive and free-flowing. It had a we made sure to leave room, you know, for the spontaneous, the drumming and the dancing at the end, this wonderful group, the Shiros, that led everybody in drumming and dancing at the end of the assembly. The vitality.
Yeah.
There was a vitality that, right, the theme was restoring, healing the heart of humanity. And I really feel that it was the feminine component that did that. You know, that it was not just an idea, but a very palpable, living, heartfelt, living reality. That there was a tremendous amount of healing that went on. And I think it went on very much for women because they were with each other across all these faith traditions. And they saw each other and they recognized each other and they honored one another. They were seen and they were heard. And that alone was a healing experience. It was deeply empowering, and it was very healing.
And I really appreciated the attention that was given in program selection and structuring to have a balance of men and women. And for the most part, as we went through the whole parliament, I mean, there's always room for adjustment, whatever. But one of the wonderful things was seeing that many panels had both men and women on them, and there was dialogue, there was collaboration.
Yeah.
You know, on International Women's Day, and every year there's a different theme, and parity is part of the theme for the one this year. I've been talking about how goddess spirituality has been helping to redecorate the halls of religion.
Oh, I love that.
And I really do think that those of us who are pagan, women and men, both have, by embracing the divine, not only in a huge oneness aspect, many traditions have that, but to celebrate the multiplicity, and within that multiplicity to acknowledge the divine feminine as well as the divine masculine. And different traditions will give emphasis or focus on part or all of that. Having that type of diversity being present in an interfaith realm is not only a chance for us to connect with each other, but to collaborate with people across national boundaries and religious boundaries that have some common ideals. And I want to thank you for all of the work that you've been doing over the years, not only in the Parliament of the World's Religions, but I'm just looking at being one of the change makers in bringing forth some more possibilities and to really help move our world to equality.
Well, you and I have been working on this for a long time,
well,
Selena. I mean,
well,
you know,
the
Lady Liberty League. I mean, I hope that new pagans, young pagans, you know, will really pay attention to the history. I mean, it's ironic. I find it kind of weird to be, you know, sort of part of the history. Margo and I were at the American Association for Sociology of Religion, and Michelle Mueller presented a paper on sort of Gardnerianism and history and sexuality. And I'm sitting there with Margo going, we're now like the subject of academic papers, you know, and Michelle's wonderful.
It's true.
It's bizarre. And of course, what happens is that by definition, if you haven't participated in it, you're going to distort it. It, you know, even the best of intention, and Michelle is terrific, it was fascinating to see it being viewed, you know, through a lens, right, as opposed to firsthand experience. But it's so important for people, even though there's going to be that distortion that takes place because of the lens, right, because of the tunnel of time, even that distorting factor, it's, I think it's just so important for people to be aware of the history of this movement and the struggle, you know, that you and others, you know, were at the forefront of, in order, you know, to create these open and safe spaces, to create the foundations for the community that's grown so rapidly. There were people who went before and who had to fight the fight, and it at great personal price, you know.
True, and it's been good having you in the company of going into places where no priestesses have gone before.
Yes. Well,
one
and we did
things.
It together. We did it, you know, I think we were able to do it. I mean, we each sort of covered, you know, sort of separate area, but there was always this, you know, if it was a legal matter at the very beginning when there were no other lawyers, you know.
Right.
In the interfaith movement, when it was just, you know, a handful of us and, you know, doing everything we could to make sure the doors were open for the rest of the pagan community to come in, you know, to join us, that we were there for each other, you know, and I think that's one of the most important things. I hope that people, when they look back, will see that we work together, you know, to open the doors and make the world a safer place. I know that for many young pagans, you know, that part of the appeal of witchcraft, of certain, you know, other pagan paths, is that they are other, right? That they are, they enter the realm of the taboo, that they are avant-garde or rebellious or contrarian. And that's, you know, an important part of this, you know, is that sort of oppositional role. But with time, you know, there comes a need for safety, you know, because one, you have children, and because you have values that have a place in a broader society, that have a tremendously, I think, I mean, I think that the spiritual practices and the spiritual truths that unite most pagan paths are essential to the survival of the planet. And so we need to have a place at the table. We need to be viewed not as oddities, but as seers and sibyls and wise ones who've kept alive, you know, the wisdom of the earth, the wisdom of our ancestors, which is precisely the wisdom that the future needs. And, you know, that, I think that's part of the role that, you know, we, there, you know, this, there's a, you know, there are a number of elders that fought the fight to open the door and to bring us to the table and have us recognized and respected at that table. And we still have a long way to go. And I'm hoping, and, you know, I see it. There were a lot of young pagans at this parliament because it was in the United States. And I, you know, my hope is that people will carry on the work
too.
That we started. Yeah.
Absolutely. So any blessing or wish on this International Women's Day to kind of put out into the world, because it is a new moon, of course, as well. Any blessings or final words?
Well, Selena, you've been a blessing. You've been a blessing in my life and in the lives of so many other people, you know, for whom you were a courageous advocate. And you were one of the first, you know, to get out there and build a landed community. And so thank you for the blessing that you've offered with your service. And I guess, you know, the blessing I would offer is my commitment. I mean, periodically I need to remove myself from the community because I, you know, I have a mystic's path and I need that time. But I'm going back to work on my fourth book, you know, now that
Wonderful.
My service. Yeah, now that my service, my public service, my period of public service, you know, for 6 years at the Parliament on behalf of the pagan community and the Great Mother. So now I'm going back to work quietly on a book, and then I'll go back to teaching publicly. And that will, I hope, will be a blessing that I can share. And at the time of the new moon, you know, in the time of this returning spring, that life is coming back and that we should all rejoice in the gifts that we've been given. I know every day, you know, I feel like I wake up and I'm like, wait, I went out for pizza. I came back and I'm 60. What? I'm in my 60s. Who? What? You know, I'm part of history. What are you talking? You know,
I know years
I'm grateful
ago
for
you were called.
Yeah.
Well, years ago, Jane Magazine called you one of the 10 gutsiest women of the year. Well, while that was many years ago, the gutsiness is still there, and the wisdom is there as well. And my wish for you is continued well wishes for all your good works and my blessing for the planet on this International Women's Day and New Moon is that there will indeed be equality for women and men, equal pay, equal respect, education for all who would like education, the opportunity for people to be able to celebrate the divine and recognize the divine has many faces, including the divine feminine, and being able to have more divine feminine images and understandings in that larger spectrum known as the halls of religion and spirituality. So I have many blessings for this International Women's Day, and I'm so glad you were able to join us tonight.
Oh, it was a pleasure, and I thank you for that blessing and for the
now,
chance to share these memories with you. It was delicious.
Well, it's been great. Now, if people want to find out more about you and your work, you've got a website, www.philliscrott.com. And there's some great videos there, as well as a more in-depth bio and information about your books. It's really a wonderful website. And I'm so glad that you have multimedia available for people.
Yeah,
this is wonderful. Yeah, best wishes on your upcoming book.
Thank you, dear. It's always it's a challenging and a magical process. This one is about a profound encounter with the Green Man that took place in Italy a number of years ago, and the challenge of solving the mystery of why he appeared and what his message was. And I think it's well timed now. And I'm actually, after many years of not being able to write because I just needed to sort of sit in the silence of what I had experienced and understand it, I think I'm ready, and I think this is the right time, and I understand the message that was delivered and the timeliness of it. So I'm looking forward to working again, and I'm looking forward to speaking again. I will tell you, strictly personal now, but everybody's just going to listen in, that the pleasure of the talks that I gave years ago, year after year, those number of years, at your extraordinary gathering was really helped me, you know, in formulating my thoughts in the second book. Those were extraordinary gatherings and wonderful opportunities for me that I really treasure. So I'm looking forward to getting to work and coming back to the community again.
That would be wonderful, Yael. It was great to have you at Pagan Spirit Gathering, and we have a variety of different events now, and look forward to connecting in the future. Well, thanks to everyone who tuned in tonight for Nature Folk. Happy International Women's Day and Goddess Blessing.
It's really no big deal. And this is every day, guys.
She's a mother off to work. She is driving in her car. She's a goddess in the elevator, rising like a star. They say she's working like a man, but they don't understand. She's dancing with the goddess in her heart. She's that woman on the phone. She's smoothing out a deal. And though her back is aching, she's a goddess in high heels. She works 6 a.m. to 3, and it may be hard to see, but the beauty of the goddess runs deep.
Trying to find a way. I am the maiden and the mother and the crone, but it's really no big deal. It's just another day.
Here's a goddess in a skirt, lonely legs. She can drop you to your knees and make you beg. We are obsessed with her body, but we don't see that the beauty is life beneath. She's a goddess on the job, a goddess in your bed, a goddess for the children, and she keeps the family fed. You must never treat her mean, always elevate your queen. She's the everyday goddess of your world.
It's really no big deal, I'm just an everyday goddess, doing all my trying to find a way. I am the maiden and the mother and the crone, but it's really no big deal. It's just another day.
Joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.